So when Regina played her John Anderson song, which was lots of fun, I went, ah, a song. I need a song. So what should I play? And this is what came in. So let me, and I listened to this last week. I don't know the relevance. I'm just doing as I'm told. So let me, wait. Sorry, guys. I don't have things pulled up the way they ought to be pulled up. But I'll get it. And share this song. Share computer sound. All right. Here we go, I think.
Chimney tops, that's where you
Sean is saying, how young was she in this movie? You know what? I don't know the answer to that. It'd be interesting to know if she was young. yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed the song. And I'm like, okay, what's this got to do with anything? and what comes to me is that it's, you know, it's just an expression of that true desire, you know? So I think that's what's going on in that song in the video. when Regina was teaching in the last hour about enlightened leadership looking at your employees and seeing if they're stressed out, I was just sure she was talking about me. Of course, every time she talks, I'm just sure she's talking about me, but man, that rang true. So I come to you today. I'm like, the mind before, as it's nearing my time to speak, the mind's going, you don't have anything to say. You might as well tell these people to go home. You know, they got better things to do, because surely you have nothing of value to share. So, you know, we know that's BS, so I guess we know it. But yeah, so it seems like there's a lot going on. It seems like the role that I have in this organization is changing. It seems that I'm asked now, you know, to do what I want to do. It's absolutely changing. I'm like, yay. But it seems like the time has come for me to be more contemplative and sorry, got distracted and less distracted. And that teaching, particularly with leading gentle healing year one, I'm right now working on a retreat that I will be presenting at the retreat house. I think the first date is June. But anyway, it just seems like I'm moving more into that and more away from, certainly I'm still, you know, balancing the checkbook and doing the office stuff that I do. But I can feel a shift here. I can just feel a shift. So, and at the same time, all these old things are coming up, like this, you know, this radio issue and, that needs to be done, and that there's just some technical things that need to be done. So I'm starting to feel like that plate is full and overflowing. So I'm feeling some of the stress of that. I am taking care of a family member right now as well, and that seems very stressful. Although I will note that when Regina was teaching in the last hour, she talked about most of you are here, so you so you'll know what she talked about. But she talked about part of that is doing what needs to be done and letting go of control. So it seems like I'm helping this family member. And at the same time, I am looking towards outcomes. I am looking at having this person get it together so that they don't need to be looked after anymore. And so I heard Regina teach in the last hour that, you know, imagine this, but that's where a lot of the stress is coming from. You know, it's not just that this person needs assistance right this moment. It's that I have a goal in mind. We're going to get this done. We're going to get this done. We're going to get this done. And then I can let it go. Then I can get that off my plate. So, you know, maybe the only goal is getting it off my plate. Oh, look at that, a selfish goal. So that's good to look at. So with that, I'm going to back up to a journal entry that, I see it's 111. Here it's 1:11 p.m. Anyway, I'm going to back up to a journal entry that occurred before my last teaching here. But I think it's right on point with what was brought up for me today in listening to Regina. I said, it's confusing to see how this can be about me, right? Talk about taking responsibility for sight. You know, it's not their issue, it's mine, right? So it's confusing to see how this can be about me without being attached to the thoughts about how this affects me. What am I to see in this situation? And the response was, you are to learn that the script must play out. You are not responsible for others, but you must open to your experience as it occurs. You are not to hope for the best. That would involve determining what is best. You are merely to open to all possibility. Wow. What the heck does that mean? Well, it looks to me like that might mean letting go of control, right? Open to allowing it to be what it is. As Regina said a moment ago, accepting the whole situation, not just seeing it from my perspective, not just fixing it so it'll go away. Opening is what I'm asking you to do. Opening is the opposite of self-protection. There is no strategy that will keep you safe, for you are not vulnerable to circumstance. And then at that time, I was led to look up the definition of vulnerable. And the first definition I got was susceptible to physical or emotional attack or harm. And, you know, when I think about being vulnerable, that's certainly when, you know, make it stop. Too much. I got too much to do. But then I was guided to look it up again. And this was the definition. Being vulnerable happens when you trust completely. There you go. That's what I'm asked to do, to trust completely. And what is that other than opening to all possibility? Right? The universe has got this. Doesn't need my help, doesn't need me to channel it in certain directions, doesn't need me to envision what the best outcome is here. That's not for me to do. In fact, the only thing that can be for me to do is to experience what I'm experiencing, not to try to keep it at bay. You know, NTI says, you know, your only job is to be. And guess what? You're doing it. You're sitting here breathing. So you're doing your job. You're being, right? But what we're being asked to do, and I wrote a little bit about this when I wrote a tip for General Healing Year One this morning, is to remove the filters between me and beingness. Removing those strategies that I have developed to protect myself from physical or emotional attack or harm. Isn't it funny how those two different definitions of vulnerability are completely opposite? Being vulnerable happens when you trust completely. That's what I'm being asked to do, to open to all possibility, to give up the strategies of protection. And Inner Wisdom says, you allow yourself to be open to whatever may come, knowing that what comes is perfect. The hallmarks of listening to mind, Inner Wisdom says, the hallmarks of listening to mind are self-protection and opinion. You are correct to watch the mind sound the alarm that you must engage in these mental gyrations without following its advice. Okay, that was a long sentence. So let me break it down. You should watch the mind. You should watch it sounding the alarm going, something must be done. Something must be done. But don't follow its advice to do something, right? And Inner Wisdom says, do what I give you to do and trust that what is happening is perfect now. And I asked, is there anything else you would share with me today? And the response was, remember to breathe and to practice. Yeah, and that's what Regina talks about, people writing this stuff in the morning and then throwing it away and never looking at it again. Well, this is a week old. So it's helpful to see that, because that's what it feels like I'm trying to do when I feel overwhelmed, when I feel like my plate is spilling over. It's because I'm trying to hold on to it, you know. And the answer is to breathe, to let it go. to let it pass through me. And I'm reminded of that scene. You all may have heard me talk about this before. There's a couple of scenes in one of my favorite movies, American Beauty, where one is, if you guys have seen the movie, one is where that bag is blowing in the wind and it's dancing and it's like they wanted to play with him. And the guy who took the movie, the character who took the movie, took the video of the bag in the wind, said, you know, he realized that there's so much beauty in the world that it just feels like it's more than he can handle. And then he remembers to breathe. And let it flow through him. And then there are slightly different words at the end of the movie where the main character talks about the same thing. It seems that there's so much beauty in the world that he just can't contain it. And then he remembers to breathe and let it flow through him. So that's good advice. Maybe I'll take it. the inner wisdom says, I am with you. I am you. Be still. Rest in my embrace. And then I read this, the next entry into my journal, I read that last week. So I'm just trying to feel into whether that's to be read again or if I'm to move on. And I feel to move on to the, so you guys heard that last week. If you want to hear it again, you can go here on the website, or I can. Maybe I should listen to it again. But I'm not going to read that now. That's the feeling. So let me move on. And this next journal entry talks about this feeling of anxiety because, and I was telling Regina about it, I'm just feeling a lot of anxiety. She suggested maybe, I don't know if it was just in response to me saying that or whether, you know, she was relying on her own intuition, feeling into where I was. But at some point we came to the conclusion that it was the I am bad thought. Of course, I'm like, I'm beyond that. What are you talking about? I don't do that anymore. So I'm wondering if I was really taking the time, and I feel like I wasn't taking the time to settle in and be with my experience, which again is the message that seems to keep coming through for me in all of these teachings that I'm looking at. It's that movement to avoid it, right? Because I think I'm vulnerable instead of actually being vulnerable, instead of allowing it to pass through me. So that anxiety is trying to keep this at bay. I'm not quite sure what that has to do with the I am bad thought, but maybe that maybe that will reveal itself here in this reading. So I said simply, what would you say to me today? And this anxiety is just like, I do want to say something else about this, and that is that Jacqueline felt like she had it all handled. You know, she's taking care of the family member. I got the, you know, I'm doing the reconciliation of the books. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm all right. And yet there was this, it feels like worms in my chest. You know, you ever seen like maggots on a piece of meat? That's what it feels like. Jeez Louise, right? Anxiety. And I was aware of it, and I was sitting with it and practicing feeling it. Okay, I call it anxiety, but what does that feel like? You know, okay, it feels like worms. It feels like a tightness in my chest, a little bit hard to breathe, a little bit of throat closed, a little bit of some tightness in my shoulder. You know, sitting with that, and that was very helpful for just being with it. And I, Kathy says she had that that guidance as well. Breathe, take a deep breath. Yeah. So I could see, though, that the anxiety was, even though I was sitting with it, I think it helps to sit with it. But, you know, the anxiety remained, this low level. But there's nothing I could tie. there's lots of things I could tie it to, but there's nothing distinct. You know, it's just like this full plate. So I asked, what would you say to me today? And the answer, your experience of anxiety, in quotes, your experience of anxiety is a driver of your actions. You have long relied upon it for motivation, for prioritization, and for solace. Okay. So it turns out, you know, it's not even like I really want to get rid of it. This is my go-to guy, right? This is how I know what to do next. What has to be taken care of? It's pretty, it kind of turned the whole thing on its head. It's like, what? I thought I wanted to get rid of it. But no, it says here, you, me, I have long relied upon it for motivation, for prioritization, and for solace. And I'm like, solace? Who takes solace in anxiety? And I was guided to look up the word solace. And it said, comfort or consolation in a time of distress or sadness. All right, so again, the guidance came. Look up distress. Distress is liability or exposure to pain, suffering, trouble, etc. And I think that I think that definition actually begins to wave the red flag. Hey, there's more going on here than you're aware of. Sorry, your picture's all moved around and I got distracted. So let me just, it's funny how they do that. It's like those old games, you know, you used to flip that thing and to get the person's face to line up. Yeah. Let me not be distracted. Let me look at this again. So again, your experience of anxiety is a driver of your actions. You have long relied upon it for motivation, for prioritization, and for solace. Solace, comfort or consolation in a time of distress or sadness. Distress, liability or exposure to pain, suffering, trouble, etc. Inner wisdom said, while it is pain and distress, you would avoid participation in avoiding anxiety is what you do. Whoa. It is this movement that creates a continuous loop of experience. So while I'm going, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it, that's participation in it. That's not letting it pass through me. That's not resting, you know, rest, accept, and trust. That's not resting. That's not just being with that experience. And only by being with that experience can I let it pass through. Yeah, again, while it is pain and distress you would avoid, participation in avoiding anxiety is what you do. It is this movement that creates a continuous loop of experience. You must rather turn towards the source of upset. Oh, yeah, right. Which way? Yeah, towards the source of the upset. Avoidance allows it to remain hidden rather than being seen through. Be willing to experience the pain you would avoid. Be willing to sit with the pain rather than doing something about it. Yeah, that's the embrace. You know, Inner Wisdom said before, remember to breathe and to practice. I am with you. I am you. Be still. Rest in my embrace. So it's that embrace of stillness. That it's that embrace within stillness that's being talked about here. Be willing to experience the pain you would avoid. Be willing to sit with the pain rather than doing something about it. And again, you know, the mind solution is always do, do, do. We can do this. We can, you know, we put this family member together and get them, and then we'll get onto this radio thing, and then we'll do. And that's all the doing that the thinking mind would have me do. Be willing to sit with the pain rather than doing something about it. And this next line was, I thought, oh, that must be just, you know, my thinking mind writing, because this doesn't seem to comport with what I think I know about spirituality. It says, there is no reason for you to experience pain in any situation. What? There is no reason for you to experience pain in any situation. That is, situations do not cause pain. Rather, it is your reaction to your experience that is the source of pain. Without investigating the pain that you seem to experience, you bury your pain and continue to react to it by building in avoidance, rejection mechanisms that kick in automatically in an effort to relieve you of the necessity to react. So let's, again, that's a, that sentence looks like it needs to be unpacked a little bit. So without investigating the pain that I experience, I bury it. and yet when I bury it, I continue to react to it. It says here, by building in mechanisms, avoidance, rejection mechanisms, you know, so that I don't have to think about it, right? So I'll just, I've got these mechanisms that then kick in and relieve me of having to deal with that pain, with that anxiety. So again, I want to read the sentence. Without investigating the pain that you seem to experience, you bury your pain and continue to react to it by building in avoidance rejection mechanisms that kick in automatically in an effort to relieve you of the necessity to react. That is, to cushion the blow, to protect you from having to deal anew with the seeming source of pain. Move aside, I've got this. That's what the thinking mind, you know, don't worry about that. I got this. You can go on with your day and deal with this. That's what the avoidance rejection mechanisms do. The next thing that Inner Wisdom says is you do, in fact, know how to surrender. I'm like, where is this going? As I read the next sentence, I'm like, what? Oh, funny. You do, in fact, know how to surrender. This avoidance mechanism is proof of that. It seems, however, that you have been surrendering to illusion rather than to truth. So I'm willing to give up control. I just give it to the mind, right? To this mechanism, this built-in mechanism that's going to deal with this for me. So I clearly know how to surrender. It seems, however, that you've been surrendering to illusion rather than truth. We are learning to reverse that process by learning to not only accept, but to open to what is. It's not a begrudging, okay, all right, put that on my plate too. I can handle this. It's really a willingness to, experience. To see what's really going on here, to move beyond this automatic avoidance rejection mechanism, to being with my experience, to take that automatic thing out of the mix and to just be with my experience. We are learning to reverse that process by learning to not only accept, but to open to what is. And yeah, that's something that Ann and I got to practice at the Enlightenment Intensive. Can you open to whatever that experience is? Whether it's a shortness of breath or a feeling of joy or irritation or the feeling of my legs against the chair that I'm sitting in. Really, what does that feel like? Not the thought, my legs are on the chair. Not even the thought, I feel pressure. It's not defined by thought. It's like, no, feel it. Don't define it. Really be with that. That's opening to it. It's opening to it without the need to define it. What is my experience right now? And that's great when you're talking about your legs on the chair. But when you're talking about the maggots in your chest, it's like, so inner wisdom says, we are learning to reverse that process by learning to not only accept, but to open to what is. This is why we turn to the process of awareness, watching awareness. Let's look at your experience without needing to filter it, to soften the blow, so to speak. Trust your heart. Trust the process. Grace will carry you through the pain to the awareness that pain is illusory. Yeah, so that's, that's normally what we do, or not normally, but usually, what we do is we believe that it's pain, we believe that it's anxiety, we believe that it's something to be avoided, or I do. I believe all those things. Ooh, that's painful. Tell me how to avoid it. The source of that, I'm reminded of Regina teaching us to look at the source of the thought. The source of that is the mind, but it's a rigged game. The mind's going to go, oh, you're feeling fluttery in your chest. Let me tell you what that is. That's anxiety. It's understandable. You should feel anxious because oh my God, you got so much going on. And now I'm going to tell you how to avoid it. And so it just builds and builds and builds again, because as we've learned, if we don't just be with it, it stays, right? It's just there. But as we sit with it and we open to it, as I sit with it, as I open to it, I see it's just a squirmy feeling in my chest. Okay, I can do that. Yeah, okay, what else is going on? Okay, I can feel my throat. Yeah, it's a little closed and a little tightness. You know, we went through that a while ago. But then I'm with the experience. Well, what's so awful about that? It's an experience. And at bottom, that experience isn't different from anything else. That experience isn't any different from me sitting on the front porch and feeling the sun shining on my face. What's that feel like? Oh, it feels warm. You know, again, without actual words, without actually defining it, what does that feel like? Right? Wind blowing my hair, warmth on the face. Okay, and this is different from this, how? This wormy feeling in my chest, how? It's only different if I define it as different, if I define it as unacceptable. If I try to pin it on something, on the family member or on the circumstances or on, if I try to make it evidence that something needs to be different. Again, inner wisdom says, let's look at your experience without needing to filter it, to soften the blow, so to speak. Trust your heart. Trust the process. Grace will carry you through the pain to the awareness that pain is illusory. It's just another experience. All right, so that's all the journaling that I have. What I do have is a teaching from Jan Fraser that I think touches on some of these same points. You all may have seen this. Kathy Smith, I know, gets these notices of the new Jan Fraser teachings, and she often posts them for us in on the Awakening Together Facebook page. So, anyway, I'm just going to read from this, and we'll see the relevance. That's what came to me to do, is to read this. So we'll just see. No separation is the name of her teaching. She says, what does it mean when it's said that you're not separate? That you are not, compelling appearances to the contrary, apart from anything in momentary experience, another person, the immediate scene, what you're doing, observing, at no distance from the vastness that some call divinity. What does it mean that the appearance of duality is illusory? What can it possibly mean that there is, in fact, no you? This shocking matter of fact is among the things that become vivid upon radical awakening. It is not to be understood by the ordinary mind. And what is the possible usefulness of contemplating this in advance of its having become obvious? Which is what you're being invited to do. Yeah, this is, I think this article's right on point. She says, spirituality is commonly turned to as a way to distance oneself, to escape something, either life or your painful interior. Spirituality can be used like a drug or any other distancing mode. Meditation, spiritual beliefs, and earnest practices mean to push away the pain of existence. it may seem that you need to heal, as if the self that can suffer needs to heal in order for the truth to be finally be known. All of which reinforces the illusion that you are apart from reality, both the unmanageable outer and the messy inner. Something seems to need fixing in order for peace to arrive. Discipline appears necessary. Some kind of change needs to be made. It all creates the impression of separation, outer and inner. Parts of you are walled off from other parts, the ugly from the spiritual, the things you avoid feeling. You continue to judge the now, to prefer one version over another. And again, I mean, I think really think this is what we were just talking about, right? I want to avoid the worms in the chest, but the sunshine on my face on the front porch, okay, I'll experience that. So I think she's pointing in this in the same direction that we've been talking about. She says, what does it mean? What does it actually feel like when the appearance of separation is gone? And again, it's what we were talking about a minute ago. It's like the mind is going to mediate this. The mind's going to tell me it's anxiety and that it's to be avoided. Or the mind's going to tell me that it's sunshine and that I should just soak that up, right? I mean, the mind wants to mediate this. And I'm marching to its dictates. Avoid what? Go towards what? But what we're being invited to do is to be with our experience, to feel it, to feel all of it without the mediation. So she says, what does it mean? What does it actually feel like when the appearance of separation is gone? Whatever is happening right now, which you are aware of via consciousness, feels real. Whatever is happening right now feels real. Nothing else does. You are not at any distance from what is perceived. You are not at any distance from what is perceived, whether that's out there, the wind, the parent screaming at the child, the smell of food cooking, or whether it is inside. Isn't it funny that this this is what all these teachings have been saying all these years? It's like, no separation, what? It's just funny to for me to bring it home, you know, to begin to participate in life instead of using the mind to separate me from it all the time, to protect me from it all the time. Jan says, what might be inside? The sensation, perhaps, of feeling in a rush, aching sorrow over a loss, the mind processing the recent news of a diagnosis, the pleasure of warm water passing over the skin in the shower, delight in the revisiting of an exchange with a loved one, or the pain of recalling another sort of exchange. Each thing fully allowed, saturating awareness, no distancing from any of it. And says, a thousand oh-so-human movements that seem to have made the apparently separate self what it is. Only now, with not a drop of it resisted or mentally handled, it feels simply like life being life. Because conscious awareness makes no attempt to distance itself from any of it, painful or joyful. The sense of unity, of radical aliveness in what is most pronounced. The sense of unity, of radical aliveness is what is most pronounced, more than any particular movement within consciousness. What's absent is the familiar impression of a there. Yeah, when I remember when I read this yesterday, I thought it was a weird way to do this sentence. What's absent is the familiar impression of a there being a self experiencing things. So what's absent is that that this is happening to me, that I, you know, that there's this thing experiencing things. That's the separation. That's what the mind does. That's what gets set up. That's the one error that gets set up when I try to avoid things, when I try to mediate things, when I look to the mind to say, tell me how to experience this. That is the separation. So that when you're not modulating, when you're not mediating, when you're not avoiding, there is just experience. There is just beingness. There is just lifingness. What you are each moment is the same as wherever attention is just now. It is all about the now. Anything else that might tap you on the shoulder looking for attention is recognized to be the activity of the mind. You do not become lost in it. You simply recognize it as a thought pointing to some distant reality, in quotes, one not presently experienceable. It's just a thought. It's not experience. It's not living. It's not being. In the middle of a given now, which is all there ever is, all that is real, you are to go looking for a self. If in the middle of a given now, which is all there ever is, all that is real, you were to go looking for a self, no you would be found. All that would be discernible would be the awareness of the content of the moment, which is, of course, in constant flux. No stability anywhere, neither a you nor life. All is flowing, not predictable, let alone controllable. Yeah, so all the while I'm running around going, I can't control anything. You know, that's because it's where I'm focused my attention. I'm focusing my attention on the illusion that there's something that can be controlled, that there's something that I need to control, instead of just being with what is. And being with what is what is. There's no mediation between me and that. I'm experiencing experience. I am experience. I'm reminded of that time in NTI when Regina talks about transposing words in a sentence, and she was talking about consciousness experiencing something. And was that in NTI or in Ramana? Inner Ramana says, no, it doesn't work that way. Consciousness doesn't experience. Consciousness is experience. Is that kind of a, does that sound right, Regina?
Yeah, it said consciousness sees experience, but doesn't experience it.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So Jan talks about all that we would be discernible would be the awareness of the content of the moment, which is, of course, in constant flux, no stability anywhere, neither a you nor life. All is flowing, not predictable, let alone controllable, which is, of course, in no way resisted. In order for resistance to occur, there must be a self to do the resisting. So you're saying just now, what is one to do in the meantime? What constitutes the authentic spiritual life? in the longing to come at last to rest in the real, what might bear fruit? Why is the writer of this essay bothering to say all of this? Here's what not to do. Try to get there. As if there were a where to get to, right? Here's what not to do. Try to get there. Allow yourself to rest from that fruitless effort and from the effort to fix yourself, either to heal psychologically or to discipline yourself into a quiet mind, to construct another wall between awareness and the ugly or painful parts of yourself. Instead, go for this. Any moment you become aware of what is presently happening around you or within, notice what you are doing to create the impression of being apart. Judging, avoiding painful feelings, denying, comparing. It is not about trying to stop yourself from doing these things. That'd be another doing, wouldn't it? It is not about trying to stop yourself from doing these things. It is to see, to feel that they are happening. Allow conscious awareness to recognize the distancing effect of this handling of momentary life. Here's what else is fruitful. Omit no opportunity to ask the question, what is real? Right now, what is actually occurring within and without? What is there that is prior to all mental filters? Notice what it feels like in the body to simply, fully, allow each piece of momentary reality to be as it is. To not separate yourself from any of it, whether it's inside or in the immediate scene. Allow awareness to penetrate any momentary impulse to manage or to protect, separate yourself from what's occurring, either within or out there. For this too, this walling off impulse is real in the moment. That in you that is aware of what's happening in this moment, simply aware, without mental filters or any movement to change any of it, is the truth of what you are. All the rest of it, the memory of suffering you've experienced, the mess that the world is in, the beliefs you've allowed to define you, is not directly available to consciousness, but requires the engagement of the mind, your willing participation. Omit no opportunity to explore the truth of this. When consciousness is fully attuned to the now, to the real, the sensation is of porousness. That's cool, isn't it? It goes right along with what we were talking about a while ago. I remember to breathe and allow it to flow through me. When consciousness is fully attuned to the now, to the real, the sensation is of porousness. Whatever is happening, discomfort in the body, a breaking heart, cars rushing past on a street corner, is felt to be within. Or are you within it? There is no felt difference, no boundary. Simply, your awareness is not apart from whatever is in the momentary picture. There's no mediator. There's no definition. The more intimate awareness becomes with what is, including both observable, immediate reality and the complicated reality of what is within, yielding to whatever is there. Okay, I'm going to restart the sentence again so we don't miss the import. The more intimate awareness becomes with what is, the less distance can be felt between you and reality. We remove that buffer. We remove that mediator, that explainer, definer. The more intimate awareness becomes with what is, and that's how we remove it, by being with our experience. The more intimate awareness becomes with what is, the less distance can be felt between you and reality. You are life. This nugget of it. This nugget. Painful or glorious, it is fully allowed, felt. Then it's gone. Something else is happening. You are each moment just as it fleetingly is, living at last. None of it being about you. What you? So, thanks, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to share. Thank you for being here with me. And I'll be out next week because we have our retreat in La Vita. I'll be back the week after that. I love you. Thank you. Bye.